With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, Julia Roberts boards a yacht to fake her own death and escape her abusive husband and his amazing house on the beach. But after an unbelievably useful phone call from a woman she went to swimming lessons with, he realizes she's still alive and hunts her down like a mustachioed Terminator. From 1991... it's Sleeping with the Enemy.
She is a stranger in a small town.
What's your name?
Hey, Will.
Where are you from?
A lot of questions.
Behind her smile...
what is it with you?
...is a secret. Behind her laughter... is fear.
Wow! I'm sorry.
Behind her happiness...
are you okay?
I'm gonna be.
...is a past she can never forget.
While in the blue corner... more boat-related fakery as Ashley Judd's other half disappears over the side of their yacht, presumed not only dead, but murdered by her. Released from jail, she breaks her parole to hunt down her very much alive hubby, while Tommy Lee Jones tries to recapture the fugitive. From 1999, it's Double Jeopardy.
I didn't kill my husband.
Libby Parsons is in prison for a crime she didn't commit.
I'd like you to adopt my son. Money won't be a problem.
It isn't about money. Thank you.
Hi, Mommy.
Hello, sweetie pie.
Daddy.
Nick?
You ever hear something called double jeopardy? The state says you already killed your husband. They can't convict you of it a second time. That means that when you leave here, you can kill him. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. It makes you feel warm and tingly all over, don't it?
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Putters. We all forget things. That's what reminding's for. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Excellent.
Cool.
Yeah, yep. Good.
No one's mentioned the unsightly bruise I have on my arm. I've told you about it, Victoria. I haven't
tell
told you.
Everybody
I haven't
what happened.
You, how'd you get a bruise on your arm, Alex?
Why am I a prick? You can't foresee an accident like this. I was dancing around. I had a fire pit in my garden, and I was dancing around the fire pit, very pagan-like, listening to...
doing a spell.
Psalm 41, not so pagan-like. And my hammock has been left out in the rain recently, and I jumped on it with my buttocks, and I went straight through it.
So when you said this, I thought you meant, you know, like a cartoon, like you twizzled round in it and then hit the floor, but did it break?
Well, I'm not a cartoon character, so I couldn't have done that. But
when you said you were dancing in the style of a pagan ritual, were you naked?
I mean, some things are better left unsaid.
He told me, yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, you're lucky the bruise is just
it's
on your arm.
It's a spiky bomb, and that's what happened, and he landed on it.
I couldn't work out your face then. Was that arousal or disgust?
No, grim.
Jealousy.
Grim. Some 40 bloody one. Put the Wicker Man soundtrack on.
It wasn't an actual pagan ritual. I was just dancing around a fire. It was very, okay, very bohemian, actually.
Anyway, but, definite first world problems. Dancing on my fire pit and hit my hammock. Everyone can relate to that listening.
Welcome to my world. I'm Clash Pod's answer to John Cleese on Richard and Judy. Right then, my choices this week, Sleeping with the Enemy versus Double Jeopardy. The reason, simply because I have never seen either of these films. So excuse me while I use this podcast to fill in the gaps in my movie life.
It's a dangerous reason.
Why?
Well, in case you hate them, and everyone does.
Oh, no, I don't have that much power in this room to make you hate them. You know your own mind, Chris, better than anyone. And I think we should keep it that way. So the clue I gave last week was Till Death Don't Us Part. Until death us don't part. Yeah, whatever. Do you know what? I ended up going home and looking that up because you made me paranoid.
Me too.
And it's both versions.
While it's grammatically correct to say till death us do part, the usual wording in England is till death us do part, as the latter is the wording used in the form of solemnization of matrimony in the 1662 Book of Common Prayer. I apologised to you last week. I'm taking that apology back.
You're right. I think the small talk section of the show needs to go. I prefer just getting into it. But, okay. Okay. Then Chris followed that up on Twitter with, you can fake your death, but you can't escape your past, and also husbands from hell. So we tried to hide, but you followed us on Twitter at ClashPod and on Instagram at ClashPod. Here are this week's guesses. I'm just going to do the winners this week. Congratulations to Gemma Page, Paul Logue, but our first correct guess came in from, and I think he's a first-time winner. Chris isn't so sure, but either way, congratulations, Tim Wilkins, who says, my good lady Heidi says Sleeping with the Enemy versus Till Death Do Us Part, but I'm going for Sleeping with the Enemy versus Double Jeopardy. So with help from his good lady Heidi, our winner this week is Tim Wilkins. Your prize is a trip on a yacht with Victoria. It does say here the ticket is one way. Not sure if that's relevant.
I'm coming back.
One of you is. Right. Connections then. What do you got?
You've done them. So beautiful women with problems live in beautiful houses by the sea.
Mm. Boats.
Same producer, actually. Did you notice that?
No.
Oh. Yeah, Leonard Goldberg. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Mm. Probably says a lot about Leonard if he's got,
I know,
he's got a niche.
Can we put a boat on it?
Boats, boat deaths, fake boat deaths.
Yep.
That's it.
Good. Good. Shooting people.
In the chest.
Mm. As the climax. Yeah. And specifically, someone coming to help you, them being knocked unconscious, and then you shooting them. The climaxes of both movies are very similar.
Yeah.
A random connection, but Kevin Anderson and Bruce Greenwood both played Kennedys, two of their most famous roles. They both look a bit like the Kennedys. Mm. One was in Hoffa and the other in 13 Days.
Oh. Awkward sex scenes. Both have quite uncomfortable sex scenes.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Especially Sleeping with the Enemy.
Especially, yeah. Sleeping with the Enemy. But the sex scene in Double Jeopardy, it's a bit at the very end where Ashley Judd is just lying there, sort of grinning at him. Like, she doesn't say anything. She's just like grinning.
She's happy.
It doesn't seem like happy. It seems like yo, you finished. Well done, kiddo. So that's a bit weird. Both are in the 20% bracket on Rotten Tomatoes, and yet both made over $175 million on relatively small budgets.
Really? Jeopardy's that low?
Yeah, I think Jeopardy's 27% and Sleeping with the Enemy's even lower, 22
or 21. Only because I remember critics hating Sleeping with the Enemy, but I don't remember them hating Double Jeopardy.
Any more for any more?
No.
All right then. So on Thursday, Victoria just wants her son back. Double Jeopardy. But today, Chris is going to ask why the hell Julia Roberts flushes her ring down the toilet in Sleeping with the Enemy. Chris takes on a journey.
Okay, here we go. In Sleeping with the Enemy, Julia Roberts plays a battered wife who escapes her abusive husband by faking her own death. However, she also leaves behind a trail of breadcrumbs that will lead him directly to her. Like putting her wedding ring in his toilet.
Mention that.
And giving his work number to her swimming teacher. So just when she's trying to start a new life involving apples, so many apples, and
harvest time,
and a creepy drama teacher, her ex shows up, moves some tins and towels, then fakes his own death so the film can end with maybe the most predictable jump scare in cinema history. Alex and Vicky, for your consideration, Sleeping with the Enemy.
Ooh.
So.
Good stuff.
Alex,
yeah.
When did you first see this film?
Chris, this was a first watch for me.
Really?
Yeah, this was not a movie I had any interest in watching as a kid in the 90s, and then I just totally forgot about its existence until now.
Good answer. Vicky, were you, like me, madly in love with Julia Roberts in 1991 and watched it on video in 1992 when you were old enough?
More or less. Video at some point. I was at school. I don't remember anything about it apart from how evil Martin is and Julia Roberts in a moustache. That's all I remembered.
Oh, see, I didn't remember that. That came as a surprise this time. I remembered her lovely hair.
I couldn't wait. I was like, Mike, wait for it. Wait for it. Yeah, there she is. She's a man now.
It's an insane disguise.
It's crazy.
It's insane. It's Blackadder Bob level of disguising yourself as a man.
I noticed though that this time she does alter her walk, which is quite method. It's quite good. She doesn't just walk in there like Julia Roberts. So she walks in there like a dude, kind of.
She walks in there like someone pretending to walk like what they imagine a man does, despite the fact they've seen men walk in real life.
And she hunches her. She rolls her shoulders up.
She sort of swaggers like like a cowboy. Very strange.
So the background to this movie is pretty simple, really. It had quite an effortless journey to the big screen. It's based on a 1987 novel by Nancy Price. It was adapted by Ronald Bass, who just had success with Rain Man. And it's directed by Joseph Ruben, who is like the godfather of the From Hell genre, as he directed The Dad from Hell before this with The Stepfather. Mm. Did you ever see The Stepfather?
I did not. No.
Great movie. And then after this, he did The Kid from Hell with The Good Son, which is a film we must do on this podcast.
I've seen that.
Evil Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, it's good.
So he's got form in the From Hell genre, but this is what he called his first major movie. And when speaking to the LA Times at the time, what he said about making his first major movie was, the biggest advantage of a big budget movie is that you get a crane. You can just ride it up and down. I'd never get off it if I could. He's quite funny. Honestly, that interview is quite funny. He was taking the piss.
Where's the director? He's up there. Now he's down there. Now he's up there again. Brilliant.
According to IMDb trivia, so this probably isn't true, the stars that were originally attached to the film lead roles were Kim Basinger, Sean Connery and Aidan Gwynn. Would have been a bit weird if Sean Connery was in it for unpleasant reasons. But then Ruben saw a brief preview of Pretty Woman. He says, I saw Julia in those 5 minutes and I was like, wow. I called up her agent and said, she's incredible in this thing. From just 5 minutes, she jumped out at me. We really weren't thinking about her at that point. But they immediately offered her the role and the rest is history. Because even though, as Alex said, the reviews were terrible, it earned just 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, the film was huge. Mm. Off a budget of $19 million, it made $175 million worldwide. It was the seventh biggest movie of the year in the States. And it reinforced Julia Roberts' position as maybe the biggest star on the planet.
Yeah, wasn't it? This was the biggest opening ever for a film with a female lead at this point.
Yeah, I think it eclipsed Alien.
Alien, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was the last one. And she became, Julia Roberts became the first woman, or at least, I think she was the youngest, she was the youngest actress ever to earn a seven-figure salary for a film based on this.
Yeah. So off the back of Pretty Woman, Flatliners, and Sleeping with the Enemy, she proved, because there were bigger, there were movie stars like Tom Cruise and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but she could make as much money of them off nothing, really, off a tiny budget and no special effects, so.
Didn't go to number one in the UK, though.
Number
two, no, it was beaten out by Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Mm.
That was what we wanted to watch in the UK.
Mm. But did it stay? Did Highlander stay at number one?
Yeah.
I feel like Sleep with the Enemy must have crept up there, surely.
Apparently the second week it was still at number two behind. His word of mouth had got out and people had gone, I probably wouldn't see Highlander The Quickening. People had gone, I'll make up my own bloody mind, actually.
And it was, I didn't write this down, but as you mentioned that, it knocked Home Alone off the top of the American charts after 11 weeks, 3 months.
Over Christmas.
No, not over Christmas. This was into February.
Oh, right.
So people were seeing Home Alone in their droves in February, which is madness. And it really touched a nerve. It's been remade 14 times.
Yeah.
There are four Hindi versions, a Bangla version, an Urdu version, a Tamil version, a Bengali version. So all over countries have made their own Sleeping with the Enemies, because I guess this story is grimly universal. And the only other thing I've got is, It's a Jerry Goldsmith soundtrack.
I noticed.
Chinatown, Alien, Gremlins, Inner Space, Total Recall, Gremlins 2, Basic Instinct, Congo, Helicopter, Adventure of the Burbs, and now Sleeping with the Enemy.
Got another one coming up soon.
We have, haven't we?
No, it's not the other day. It's weird. His name pops out of every title soon because I'm like, fucking Jerry Goldsmith. Again, yeah. He's our biggest contributor to the pod.
Him or Frank Marshall, because Frank Marshall got a big bump with four Indiana Jones movies the other day. Course. So yeah, yeah, yeah. I think they're about neck and neck.
The only other thing I found out was that Julia Roberts upset the town in which they filmed this.
Yeah.
In North Carolina, Abbeville. I just said the same word twice, or Abbeville. There really is only one way to pronounce it. Probably incorrectly.
I live by the Abbeville Road. Not the one that she filmed this on, but one in Clapham.
Yeah, she described it as a living hell and horribly racist. And the locals, in a response, pulled their money to take out an ad in Variety that read, "Pretty woman, pretty low."
Okay.
And then she had to respond to that and said that she was reacting to a single incident when she had a black friend visiting her and they were refused service in a restaurant. So that's why she said that. Nasty stuff.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'm kicking off with a section I'm calling "The Honeymoon Period Is Over."
She's clamming.
She's clamming.
What a start.
Yeah.
It's an idyllic beach and idyllic Julia Roberts playing Laura is clamming.
Yeah. They only do that, do they, to set up the apples later? Is that the only... I mean, I know that you've got to do the stuff which he's got no time for clamming and it's important to her, but all these clams are going to spoil because he wants her to go to the fancy dinner. But I really thought it was just there to show that she's quite resourceful at getting free food.
She's a forager.
She's a forager, when she sees the apples, you're like, well, you did it with the clams, so it's fine.
I just thought he was showing that she's like the perfect housewife. She doesn't need to go to the shop.
Okay.
She'll go down there, she'll bring the food back, she'll cook the food.
Yeah,
Yeah. And it's to set up the line as well where he goes, "Yeah, we're going to a party." And she's like, I'll just dig fresh ones tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Put them back, to be honest.
I mean, I don't think we see her just sort of like just take them and leave them on the porch. I think I'm sure she puts them back.
Okay.
Just think sitting there stinking. sort of thing that get you into trouble with a husband like that.
So they're having a party at their beautiful beachfront house. Yeah. Were you a fan of that
abode? Massively. It's of its time, but then that's come back round. So I would 100% do my beachfront house like that.
Yes, it's cold.
Yeah, but that's why I like it. Do you know what it reminded me of? The beachfront house in Manhunter. You know, I was obsessed with that house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe the same house.
We're talking about the house they live in or the house they go to the party in?
The house they live in. Okay. And I like the party one too.
The house they live in, yeah. Obviously, because property, and I was like, you know, I've got a hammock, I've got a fire pit. What I don't have is floor-to-ceiling glass windows overlooking a beach. So I did look it up because I was like, it seems dangerously close to the sea, that house.
Okay, yeah.
Would you build a house that close to the sea? And it turns out it's not a real house.
No.
It's a fake house built in North Carolina.
Did you see the picture from behind?
Yeah, where it's literally
it's just a
front.
Facade.
Mm. Oh.
That's disappointing.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it sort of made me feel better about my station in the world. I was like...
Really?
Well, I was like, oh, that house doesn't exist.
I couldn't even buy it if I wanted to.
He wants her to wear the black backless dress to the party.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of signs that something's not right. In this Hollywood, in this marriage, something seems a bit off. But they get home and it's all right again because he puts on Hector Berlioz's
Jesus
Symphony Fantique and he goes for it in the kitchen.
I have a question.
Mm.
You know, the bowl falls out of the kitchen falls out of her hand and it's got strawberries in it.
Yeah,
it's a plastic bowl.
Is it?
Yeah, it doesn't
shatter, does it?
Yeah, and I was like, this is interesting to me because classically you would have the bowl smash, but I thought, well, maybe she's on purpose put the strawberries in plastic bowls because the instigation of lovemaking is always so violent. She's gone through so many bowls and got in so much trouble for shards of bowl on the floor.
Yeah.
She's replaced the bowls with plastic bowls.
Interesting.
I mean, I feel like you're overthinking it, but I like...
Save her cleaning up later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the theory. And then we don't get much of the sex. I believe that sex scene was cut. And Common Sense Media weren't happy about it. They said this film is iffy for kids because it features clothed sex.
It's iffy for lots of other big reasons.
Yeah. Is this the sex scene where you see, or is it the later one? Because there's two, isn't there? I think there's a second one. There is a second one. But you see his clothes all neatly folded and hung up. He's clearly got undressed.
And then go, wait a minute.
I'm waiting because he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And hung up his shirt and folded his trousers and everything before.
He's OCD, isn't he?
Is that what you think he is?
I think that's part of it.
Okay.
I think he's also got some other issues. I don't think that's his only problem, but We catch him exercising the next morning. I looked this up. This is a Versa climber.
I really want it. I mean, I'd never use it, but I was like, you could get really fit on that, I reckon.
Yeah. I believe LeBron James, the American basketball player, that was his thing, the Versa climber.
It's very American Psycho this moment.
Yeah.
He's very intense.
Oh, because he's got socks on as well, isn't he? Yeah.
He's exceptionally sweaty as well.
His back is glistening.
But I think the film really beautifully builds the unease and the tension and the fear here, because we get him spotting the towels aren't the same length on the rail. And that's when we get the line that Alex said. Do you want to say it again, Alex? I really like that line.
We all forget things. That's what reminding is for.
It's a really good line.
I wrote down, what a moment.
Yeah, because she says thank you. That's why it's good.
Yeah.
She's not supposed to go, well, fuck off.
And it's
thank you for the lesson.
It's the first moment where we've crossed the line into suspecting some things afoot to actually being very aware.
Yeah.
Not for me. The sex scene is, because the look on her face is she's not as into it as he is. Mm. And it is quite rough. And she drops the strawberries and all the rest of it. And it's obvious to me that it's not quite on equal footing.
Okay. There's also an issue with the tins not being the right around in the cupboard. And so he's sort of seemed quite controlling, but now he becomes full on abusive.
She's great, though, at conveying. Because at this point, and again, first watch, I was like, she is brilliant at conveying the anxiety, that constant anxiety that she must be under, like having to manage the minute details of making sure everything is just as.
Perfect, yeah.
It starts with a punch and then a kick. And then he demands she joins him on a boat that evening for some night sailing.
So this is the boat dude, Jonathan, who he first meets on his own. You know their interaction there? Is there something else at play? Because he feels like he's flirting with Jonathan.
Oh, okay.
There's a little bit of like weirdness.
It is weird that Jonathan, if he's a stranger, ostensibly, is like, do you want to come on my boat later?
Yeah, I mean, fuck Jonathan is what I have to say. Because Jonathan literally goes, that must be your wife I keep seeing staring out of the window. Is that going to get her in trouble?
She's fit. She's fit as F.
Well, no, he then has a bit of fun with him. He goes, Martin, Patrick's character, Martin. He goes, I've been admiring your house. You thought I was going to say wife then, but I meant your house. But I left it long
enough.
They're
both possessions, yep. So it's fine. Let's see how the joke works.
And so we then move into a section I'm calling Till Death Us Do Part.
did you like the moment where he actually says the line, we can't conquer our fears by running away, when she's like, I don't want to go on the boat, I can't swim.
Mm.
And he actually says the
what's
plot of
happen.
The movie.
Yeah, that's cool.
So can you answer me a question? Is sailing at night a thing?
That's a good question.
Well, I don't see the point. I guess I understand if you're going somewhere, but they're sailing to sort of...
taking the view, but
yes,
there's no view.
Can't see anything.
I think they were going somewhere, but then the storm hits. I think there was a reason. It was a journey they were making together, was it not?
I
didn't get that. I just thought it just seemed like a very strange activity to do at night rather than during the day.
Yeah.
And the storm suddenly rains down on them, and then Laura is gone.
Mm.
She can't swim, Martin tells us, for the second time, in case we missed his speech about her not being able to swim 5 minutes previous.
Did you at this point, I was sort of, my brain was going, because I was really enjoying this. I was like, okay, well, I wonder if the doctor is... part of her plan.
Right.
Like he has sort of set up this accident at sea to give her the opportunity to go over the side and swim and escape. It can cross my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Bit disappointing when it isn't.
Apologies, Al. And she's gone. I mean, Martin shouts the name Laura a lot.
Yeah.
And then, suddenly she's declared dead and there's a funeral. And then there's flashbacks to her escape as we hear this narration. Julia/Laura says, that was the night I died and someone else was saved. Someone who was afraid of water but learned to swim. Someone who knew there would be one moment when he wouldn't be watching. Someone who knew that the darkness from the broken lights would show the way.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I really love it. Because at first when she's smashing the lights, you think, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But you also think, or maybe overthinking it, but you're so frustrated and you're so angry with your life that you need to express your rage.
That's
and
right.
you've picked this light bulb that's pissed you off and you've smashed it.
And it's quite satisfying watching her manage to throw a stone at that light and
she's
take it out.
She's a dead shot. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
They do it long shot so you can see her actually doing it.
It's weird, isn't it? Because that's exactly what I thought. I thought you have no power over anything in your life, that you're taking out your frustration on this inanimate object that you can destroy.
Yeah. And it's the start of seeing how brave she's been to tell lies as well, because the fact that we established earlier, he's very angry with her for going to her mother's funeral, but that's going to turn out to not be true. And also she says, I've been working in the library 3 mornings a week. And then you very quickly find out that she was learning to swim and how bold a move that is.
Yeah, because it feels like he's the kind of person who would check up on her in the library.
Yeah.
This is the last good part of the plan, by the way. This is to go from where I was literally 30 seconds earlier, where I'm like, this film is great.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you fucking doing?
So she dons a wig, she removes her wedding ring and puts it in the toilet.
Stupid.
Just, it's a lack of basic understanding of how toilets work.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I guess it's a symbolic moment of her putting her ring in the toilet, but it's just an annoying setup for later on in the film that you wish they'd done a little smarter.
Yeah, I got a good change for that. But look, she's doing everything wrong. She cuts her hair in the house.
Yeah.
Like, terrible idea. She's trampling sand through the house. I mean, why she hasn't put together this bag of belongings and buried it somewhere, maybe near the lights she smashed. Yeah.
Because why does she cut her hair? How do wigs work? Couldn't she hide her hair under the wig?
Yeah, I suppose she's got quite a lot of it and it might make the wig stick up.
Well, I'm thinking that when she's wearing the wig, Julia Roberts hasn't cut her hair. So Julia Roberts' hair is under the wig.
Yes.
So it's not sticking up.
That's
so
true.
Just put the wig on. Yeah. I don't need to see you cutting it. And she takes a Greyhound bus. And there's a nice moment here of her sort of claiming her own narrative in exchange for an apple. But the first woman she meets, she tells her entire story to, which seems like a bad start to this adventure.
Do you think?
It just seems like a dangerous thing to do.
You know, because I was watching it going, I wonder what the significance of the apple is. Because with that black bob,
She
looks like Snow White and an older woman giving her an apple.
Yeah.
I was like, so this woman...
This is an evil woman.
She's a plant. Yeah. She's Patrick, basically ensures that on every... Like, this woman waits at the bus stop.
Yep.
He pays her because he's a rich man on the payroll to see if Julia Roberts ever gets on a bus out of here and to follow her and find out where she's going.
We see how good they are at cross-dressing in this film. So maybe Patrick Bergin would have shaved off his moustache and that's him.
That's all it would take.
I literally wrote down, she removes her mask and it's Martin underneath.
But she talks a little bit about her story, and she says she called police and lawyer, but no one really believed her or wanted to help her. And I think it's interesting because I don't think we were as understanding of domestic abuse then as we are now. Well, certainly this is just before the O.J. Simpson stuff.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way. Like, everyone I knew at school was screaming, why don't you just leave him? Why don't you just leave him? And I think maybe that's why you have to show... Oh, no, I know it's probably... Is it in the book? Like, he hits her because that makes the audience go, oh, you're definitely a bad guy. Whereas when it's coercive control and it's fucking with her about the dress and but controlling every aspect of her life to the point she can barely leave the house, there were definitely people that I knew in the 90s were like, but you can still just leave. Yeah. It's not such a big deal.
100%. And I'm sure I was thinking that. But as I say, like, it's 2-3 years later, Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered and she'd gone to the police so many times. And it was the first time we all understood. She had all the bruises, she had all the injuries, and the police did nothing. The police knew about it. And I think between this film and that case, I think it educated the world about this issue.
I think it's really effective where she actually says how long it's been as well. And she goes, 3 years, 7 months, da 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 da.
She's incredible in that scene. She really is.
She's great in this movie.
She is.
I just wish she got on longer. I wanted to know hours and minutes.
I think she does, doesn't she?
She gets that. No, she just gives this day. So she makes it to Iowa, a small town in middle America, and she's smiling at kids playing jump rope.
I mean, it's just perfect, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with this town whatsoever. Maybe it's a shade racist, but other than that, it's fucking lovely.
There's a farmer raising the American flag.
Yeah. When she, because to my experience, this is really personal, but me going home, I'd be like, oh my God, someone's raising the flag. Like, this is a nightmare. But she's like, oh, I'm home. Like,
yeah, it's because she's left the monochrome hell of Martin's world.
And she's in like little apple pie America, for fuck's sake.
The cupboard's a bright colour. It's all sort of pastel-y and soft focus. You're like, wow.
It's as you say, it's very white.
Yeah.
This whole film is very white. And I don't know if that's better or worse than what Double Jeopardy does, but we'll talk about that on Thursday. So she rents a huge house.
Yeah, but then old money. My mind was spinning. The lady says this is $700 a month.
Mm.
In 90s money. So where's she getting that sort of money from?
Well, that's a really good question. Again, I got a change for this, but it's amazing that somehow she has managed to amass cash, cold hard cash. You see her put rolls and rolls of it in the bag when she's
from
got...
under the nose of this absolute psycho control freak.
Yeah.
And also to pay for her mum's care, presumably she hasn't even got a bank account because he controls everything. Why would he give her own money?
Well, that's why she's got cash and not a bank account as well.
So he must see who's paying for like her mother's care.
And what's the reasoning for her? I mean, I guess she wants the perfect house and life, but like, I feel like you just start off with a little apartment somewhere, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah. I was surprised at how big the house is. Yes.
It's really big.
Yes, a big old house.
Because we see how big it is because we get a cleaning montage.
Oh, I like that.
You know, so she's cleaning the house. She's setting flowers down. She's sitting on the porch. She's making the towels messy. Go for it, Laura. She's making the tins in the cupboard messy.
Yeah. I like that.
I liked it too.
I like that. I just feel, I don't know, part of me at this point, and I think I'm going to be doing one of my bits if I say this now, but part of me at this point is like, it feels just a bit too like, oh, that was awful. So this is nice and fluffy and cuddly, yeah, and everything's covered in cotton wool and it's so beautiful here. And you kind of go, I don't know whether she'd want to let her hair down and party a bit more, because that's what she's not been allowed to do. Yeah. Hit some nightclubs, go out, have a drink, well, have a party, have a dance.
Well, we're taking a break now, but in the next section, we are going to talk about her partying or what her version of partying is.
Mm.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Join me, Jaguar, the host of BBC Introducing Dance on Radio 1, for my brand new podcast, Utopia Talks. It's a reactive platform to discuss issues that my generation care about in dance music culture and the wider world. I'll be talking to some of the biggest names in dance music, including people like Heidi.
The lineups do not need to be 99% male-driven. Mm. There's all these interesting new producers and women that are coming through, you know, all sorts. Yeah. It's like women are speaking out now.
And the sensational Bless Madonna.
I feel like literally my entire life has led up to this. This is the first event we've had like this, not just in the UK, but really in the Western Hemisphere. And to be able to be here with all of these people who are so happy is just absolutely the biggest, highest joy of my life.
As well as having the meaty conversations I often have with friends that I'd love you to join in with.
There's so much new energy coming out of the pandemic, and there's so many like new nights and festivals, yeah, yeah, and everyone's really pushing for this new structure where people genuinely don't feel anxious, mm-hmm, about coming to a club night because of the way they look or the way they dress. It's more about everyone in.
To me, Utopia is a perfect moment. It's togetherness. It's the future. I want to live in a more inclusive, equal world, and I hope this podcast will build a community and help create change. Subscribe now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. New episodes dropping every Wednesday. Welcome to Utopia Talks.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
And we're back with a section I'm calling Drama Queen. Because two things now happen side by side in the movie, and we're going to start with the drama as our heroine falls for a drama teacher called Ben, played by Kevin Anderson and Kevin Anderson's hair.
Question.
Wow, his hair. He's got two hairs. He's got two haircuts on his head.
He's got an actual hair on his head.
It's an insane haircut. Is Ben, so quite openly, is Ben, like, is he meant to be as creepy as Martin? Ben, so we're unsure.
Yeah,
are we meant
order.
To be unsure about him, or is this just the performance so Kevin Anderson has chosen to give?
I think it's a really good question. And if he wasn't introduced in the way he's introduced, I would say, yes, he's supposed to be more threatening. But by introducing him as the neighbour singing West Side Story while watering his lawn, I feel like there's no coming back from that. Although, he's a knobhead. He's less creepy. I feel like if they wanted to go down that route of making him seem like he might be like Martin, they wouldn't have introduced him in that soppy way.
Yeah, I think he's extremely creepy, but it's watching it as a grown-up. I think probably in the 90s, I was like, oh, he's cute and it's harmless. But the way he walks into her kitchen, the way he won't leave, the thing about, well, I'll just set a table for two. It's like, fucking leave her alone. Mm. Like, all the signals, like, read the room. And then later on, when he finds out that she's changed her name and he's like, look, just tell me what's going on. And his actual line is, I don't know how to feel what I'm feeling if I don't know what's going on with you. And it's like, it's not about
you. He tries to emotionally blackmail her into revealing her original name to him.
It's, rather than saying, I'm aware that you've done this and you've got your reasons, let's be friends.
But I mean, there's little things. Like, I swear, when she first is discovered picking up all the apples by him, his line sounds like the final line a slasher would have on a farmland set slasher movie, because he goes, harvest time. And I'm like, if that's not the last line before someone murders you with a scythe, I don't know what is. And then he goes, pie. I love pie.
Go away.
He's just like, this guy is fucking weird.
So they introduce him by having him singing a song from West Side Story. I couldn't watch this. It was making me cringe so much. It was painful. I guess they're establishing that he can dance or he can't dance. I'm not sure. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But
well, they're doing what you... I think he's creepiness. It's so hard to tell now, isn't it? Like, to me, he was far too much and kind of deserves what's coming to him and needs to leave her the fuck alone. But it does. It is diffused by him sort of being unembarrassed and singing this song and all the rest of it. It makes him seem quite innocent.
So she does steal some apples. She's not entirely innocent in all of this. he tells her off for trespassing. And then he doesn't understand boundaries, I don't think. Even physically, he's standing way too close to her.
Yeah.
This is what I mean. I just can't believe that you can't have all of this and it just be an accident. And when you come to watch your film back, you're like, oh, fuck.
What have we done?
Oh, he's not meant to be the creepy one.
She wants to make apple pie. He loves apple pie. We're back to the apples. There's too many apples in this movie. he then shows up with some apples and invites her over for dinner, and he sets fire to the pot roast.
That dinner is weird. Have two people had less chemistry. Like, Julia Roberts can manifest chemistry with anyone and anything because she's that good. And there's something about that pairing that you're just like, and also, is he like, I don't know why, because I looked it up and I couldn't believe he's older than her. I don't know what it is, but
she's a kid. She was a kid when she made this, really. She was 22, wasn't she? 23?
Yeah, but he looks to me younger than her. I don't know whether it's his haircut or his baby face, but it feels like she's the older woman in that relationship.
And he sees the cut on her forehead and he goes to touch it. It's like, just know about boundaries. You've just met this woman.
Yeah.
I mean, if I've known someone for years and I see a cut on their head, I'm not going to go and touch it. It's a weird thing to do.
I took all my power not to put my fingers in yours that time.
And so now she's working at a library, and we get quite an affecting scene where she calls her mother to hear her voice.
Oh, that's good.
She's
very good in that scene.
It's good.
Yeah, definitely. So your mother is ill, infirm, in an old people's home, and is now getting crank calls from someone who just rings you and then says nothing down the phone.
Yes.
And sort of very quietly murmurs, love you.
But the mum can handle it. It sets up the mum as being, you know, a clever old girl, which she is, because she doesn't bother. She's like, there's no one on the line, and then just hangs up. It's fine. She wasn't scared.
It's quite emotional.
I mean, it's creepy. You just don't do that.
And then we're on to brown-eyed girl. So this is the scene. I can remember watching like Film 91 with Barry Norman, and at the end of each episode, he'd play a clip from a film upcoming, and he played this scene in that. I think this was a big part of the trailer. They sold the film off the back of the thriller element, but also
the pretty woman montage.
The brown eyed girl is dancing the brown eyed girl. Mm. So it's so Ben takes her to his theatre. He makes it snow. He puts Van Morrison on as she's playing dress up backstage. It's a bit like a makeover scene.
Yeah,
but it's quite a weird one. He's juggling.
She's dressed as a clown.
Yeah.
So like, she smiles a lot because that's what we want to see from her. And he just stares at her a lot.
It's weird. It's weird. First of all, he goes into a theatre and uses whatever special effects the next production has set up for Monday's show on her by using their fake snow. And then it's not a one-song montage. This is a two-song montage. You get Brown Eyed Girl and then Run Around Sue.
Run Around Sue, one of the greatest ever rock songs.
Great song.
With the most sexist lyrics in any song of history.
But it's also, and it's a very 90s thing to do, especially because there's a lot of hats in it, but it's the woman as child thing because she's supposed to be enchanted by seeing fake snow and sitting on a pantomime swing. Mm. That's for fucking children.
No, it works. I've done that. I've used that.
And then she's trying on funny costumes and pulling funny faces. And it only made me not feel physically sick because it's her. And I'm so desperate to see her smile because of everything she's been through. And you don't want Julia Roberts to feel that sad ever. So when she finally smiles, you're like, well, if he made you smile, Julia, then it's
she's
fine.
Working very, very hard to make Ben seem not creepy.
Yeah, well, completely.
It took this scene for me to finally soften to him because I'm like, I guess you see something in him.
Yes and no, because when the Dion song comes on, he's dancing with her. His dancing's very violent.
Yeah, yes, he grabs it.
She's like a doll.
It's very jerky and very violent. I know someone's supposed to lead, but that is too much aggression.
This is what they never have. Two people had less chemistry. Yeah. They can't even find rhythm in the dancing.
But also the idea that Patrick Bergen, that Martin has got, he keeps saying, remember on our honeymoon and I told you to dance. And it's like, so the idea is if you're a creepy psycho, she could always dance, obviously. You just think you taught her to dance because she lets you lead and blah, blah, blah. So when she's dancing with Ben Woodward, she should be leading the dance because now she's finally found a partner who's happy for her to take the lead and isn't going to throw her around like a rag doll. And that's not what happens. He's chucking her all over the place.
Yeah, it should be. I don't know.
Speaking of Martin, though, there was a bit where he gets that phone call from the woman at the swimming class to inform him
he's a fucking psycho.
It's really weird because he goes, he will not accept that it's her. He keeps going, you've got the wrong person. It can't be her because be Laura. She's dead. And then, God, this is a really sort of left turn line. The woman goes, yeah, Laura, the gym teacher, because that's why she had all those bruises she always told us.
She said, she was taking gymnastics or something, wasn't she?
Yeah. And because then it's like, then, only then, does it do a real close-up of Martin's face. And his face basically goes, my bruises.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, that section in my going through it, the dance turns into them going home and then them kissing on the stairs.
Mm.
And he asks her to stop. Oh. And he doesn't.
Yeah. Twice. Three times.
Because this is when Ben really turns into a creep.
Mm.
And she ends up having to send him away because he's so threatening.
Yeah.
Although the next day, sort of almost all's forgiven.
No,
she just tells him whole story.
Because then the motherfucker, he wasn't able to have sex with her because that's what he was after all along. And he wasn't being her friend and all the rest of it. And then he has the fucking nerve to be in a fucking sulk about it.
Yeah.
So he sat there with his feet like, don't even talk to me because you wouldn't have sex with me. And she has to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
oh, man.
He's such a
Ben, that's bad.
It's really bad.
We've seen that before, though. Remember the same like pattern on Avatar, on the Avatar episode where Jake kills Natiri's father or he ends up dead.
Oh, God.
And like the first time she sees him again, she's like, I'm really sorry for not trusting
all of
you.
This.
It's like this weird thing.
So Avatar is a combination of Pocahontas, Ferngully and Sleep with the Enemy.
It looks like that, yeah.
All right. So that's the romance out of the way. Trailer breadcrumbs now.
Just one last thing. In that apology scene, she's like, look, this is the truth. I'm really scared, blah, blah. And he's like, hey, Julie Roberts, someday you might surprise yourself. It's like, have you shit? She's just escaped from prison. And he's like, but one day you might do something that surprises even you.
Yeah. And Ben also, there is that scene where he comes round and very, very violently smashes his fist against the door. Like to let her know that he's there. And then she opens it and she's like, God. And he's like, what, did I scare you? It's like, yes, Ben, anyone would be scared by a stranger smashing their fist against a door. That's not how you knock on a fucking door, Ben.
Ben either knocks too hard or lets himself in.
He does let himself in. Yeah.
Both bad.
Super threatening.
Both bad. All right, so let's get back to Martin because while this romance has been blossoming, he's been busy investigating. Clue one, Martin cuts his foot on broken glass from the light. Clue two, the YWCA calls him to say how much they will miss her and reveals the swimming lessons. As I say, she must have given them his work number. I don't know how he would have got, they would have got her work, his work number otherwise.
I'm sure they can find a way, like the yellow pages or something. She might have mentioned where he works.
I don't know. Right. I think she messed up there. Clue, Martin finds ring in toilet.
She's an idiot.
So I guess he doesn't use that toilet often.
Or at all. Went home after reporting his wife missing and then dead. And never had a wee or anything. No. Just left immediately.
I've given him the benefit of the doubt here. Maybe he has two bathrooms. Maybe that was her bathroom.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. You know, it looks like an ensuite. Maybe he's not been sleeping in that room because his possession's been taken from him.
Yeah.
And then he hires an investigator to find her.
What is this scene? Why are they in it for one scene and then you never hear from them again? It's actually unclear whether they've passed on any information whatsoever or he's just found her.
Especially as he seems to be quite good at this and I sort of believe him. He's a smart guy. So
it's the fucking Terminator. I'm fine. What you said is right. Like, it's scared. That's why it scared the shit out of me. He will not stop.
I'm fine with him tracking her down without the need for an investigator with weapons on his
wall. There's the bit where he even goes, because the mother is called Sarah Waters, and he goes, I'm looking for Sarah Waters.
He doesn't even blink.
So Martin realises the mother didn't die and heads to her nursing home. And this is where we've got a section I'm calling Brown-Eyed Boy.
Okay.
Because Laura dresses as a bloke to visit her mother. We've mentioned it, but the hair, the moustache, it's just not a good look. I mean, he's supposed to work in the theatre. Surely he's better at his job.
I don't know what it's meant to be. She looks like a sickly child with a fake moustache.
I mean, is it supposed to be bad because it's amateurish? But it's just horrible. Disguise her as a different looking woman or something. Like, give her a blonde wig or something. It doesn't even
matter either, because when she's on her way out, the woman on reception goes, hey, you know you were looking for anyone came to visit that bloke.
That man woman.
In this section, we get the most disturbing moment in the movie, which is the close-up of Martin drinking water from a fountain.
Amazing.
I mean, what is he doing?
Right, twice, though. He goes back to it. He's very thirsty. Mm,
the director, the writer and the actor, they're all like, we want more of this.
Can we make love to the water, Martin.
Make love to the water.
Lap at it. Just keep lapping. Lap it like a big fleshy cat.
Give it a Frenchie. No, stop that.
Let's use this opportunity to talk about this performance, Patrick Bergen's performance as Martin. Do you love it, or do you think it's just the dial's gone up to 11 and it should be flitting around the 9, 10 mark?
I really love it because it really frightens me. Mm. What would scare me more is, you know, when he's talking to the nurse in the care home and he's setting up this lie about if someone comes to visit this woman, would you let me know? Because I want to surprise my sister who I haven't seen for a long time and she's going to pop by, kind of thing.
Right.
So in that scene, the nurse is quite charmed. She's like, oh, you're a very good looking man, so I will do what you say, which is fine. Yeah. But he should switch then from being literally the fucking Terminator to being like a normal man who's really charming and blinks and just like, and he's handsome. So you see him do the thing that presumably ensnared poor Laura in the first place, where he can be normal and he can just be like super charming and you're just bowled over by his charisma and you'll do anything he says. Mm. And then he's like, pow, now I'm the Terminator. That would have scared me more. It's not on the actor, because I do think it's brilliant, because he's so scary.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I think it was a similar point where I'm just like, why is anyone listening to this man? Because you get a vibe, like when he's walking around being terrifying, just striding towards camera with his long coat flapping behind him, I'm like, this is great. But when you sort of see people being putty in his hands, you're like, he never loses the air of menace.
He can't be reasoned with. He can't be stopped. He absolutely will not stop.
That's it, because then he threatens the teacher, the drama teacher, who's gay, and he's like, if you tell anyone, and that teacher would be like, fuck off, I'm obviously going to call the police. Who are you?
I thought that was, this is why, I wouldn't let go of this, the doctor's in on this thing, he's helped her. I thought that was the doctor from the start. They've got the same haircut as Jonathan on the boat.
Oh,
and I was found him. So now he's going to tell him where she is.
Right.
He gets into the mum's room and she sort of inadvertently spills the beans, and then he moves in to kill her but gets interrupted. Do you think the film bottled it here by not having him murder her?
It's a really interesting one, because I was watching this going, does he need to kill her so that he can be killed at the end? Like, does that sort of, you know, I guess he's now... It tips him over into proper psychopath territory.
What the fuck? He wasn't before?
Sorry.
Are you mental?
No, but I mean, I guess something...
I'm shaking my head.
I know what you mean, and I didn't mean it like that. What I mean is, like, murdering someone is the next level, surely. actually taking a human life, and he was going to smother. But he
would. The point of Julia Roberts' situation is that that would only have ended one way eventually. It was just a matter of time. That's true.
Okay.
So I don't think you need to kill the mum in order to justify him being killed.
Okay.
I only think they bottled it because, what? Because it creates complications, because he's on a quest, and if he kills someone in that room, there'll be an investigation and all the rest of it. And obviously it will look like she died naturally, but it just creates an added wrinkle in his relentless pursuit of his wife. So that's the reason I think they didn't do it.
So if he hadn't been interrupted, do you think he'd have done it?
Yeah, I do, because I do think he would have done. I don't know how that affects the plot, because he's mad as hell and he hasn't had that control over someone for a while, and he's got a lot of emotion he wants to spend. So killing a defenseless old lady would make him feel good.
I just think it's weird, isn't it? Because I think some of the criticism that was levelled at this movie, I think it was Roger Ebert who just sort of said it's just a slasher movie dressed up as something else.
Yeah.
And I guess that would have certainly tipped it into here is a killer walking around murdering people on his mission to get to his disappeared wife.
Mm. Yeah, and you could say maybe it's exploiting a serious subject, but equally, I mean, there are these people around who will go to any lengths to do horrible things to their partners. So,
I thought he was going to kill her, I have to say, when that scene started.
Yes, he was.
He's walking towards her with a pillow. No, I thought the film was going to come through on that.
I thought I remembered it, so I misremembered it as well. And then we're into the home stretch, which I'm calling Cheaper Than a Divorce. So head to a carnival first and foremost, Ben and Laura. Martin's there. He's wearing her ring as well as his own, which I liked. And this is when he's been doing this psycho look throughout the film, but this is when he goes to he gets
this
up
is
to
too
11.
Much, too much, too
Do
much.
Do you think? I thought you'd love this. This is some serious face acting. Called it rage face.
Yeah, he's very good. But I think this is where the directing kind of lets it down a bit. And I feel the same. You know, when they're in the boat at the start and there's meant to be a storm, it's not much of a storm, is it? Like, it doesn't look that scary. And I think it's just the direction. Like, it just doesn't look that threatening. Uh-huh. And I think the director has run out of tricks a bit, where he's like, you've got the energy of a carnival, and all you're doing is like, this man's face forever.
Yeah, I've got something to say about the carnival in my bits, actually. I
thought this is where it was going to be the climax. I thought this is...
Yeah, why go there and then go home?
We're into Act 3 now. Yes. He's going to be a chase around a carnival.
Yeah, the Hall of Mirrors, obviously. Yeah.
It's what Hitchcock would have done. Mm. But Laura comes home from the carnival and she needs 20 minutes as she's going to freshen up.
As a bath. Has a fucking bath. Yeah, if someone says to me, I'm just going to freshen up.
20 minutes, she said. How long does a bath take?
I think
to run a bath takes 20 minutes, minutes.
Yeah, I agree.
And then you've got to empty the bath. What about the time for actual bathing?
Yeah, there's no time.
Well, maybe she just took longer than 20 minutes, in which case, just say I'm going to have a bath. Don't say I'm going to freshen up and then be gone for an hour while you're bathing.
So Martin starts toying with her here. The towels are back in order. Berlioz is on the tape player.
So what's that? Like, the towel thing, like, fine. She cannot remember whether they were in the right order. You know, they were all lined up. But yeah, Berlioz.
Yeah, I know. It's a terrible moment.
She presses play on that stereo and it comes on.
Yeah, and she smiles.
And for a moment, she's like, hang on. Oh, no, wait. It's fine. It's just Berlioz. It's just a piece of music that surely you would not have sitting in your tape player.
Well, no, I thought she was like, oh, Ben's done this as a joke. I thought
Ben's modus operandi.
Yeah.
But I know, is that what you think it was? I think she just sort of like, it's a dumb move where she's like, oh, I must have put that in by mistake. You'd remember putting the song that terrorized you in your cassette player.
Mm. Yeah. And now the tins are perfectly lined up as well. And we hear it. Hello, princess. It's wonderful to see you alive. And so this is the climax. Ben knocks at the door and then smashes his way in. Martin knocks him out. But I feel like Ben should have just done his jerky, violent dance with Martin, because that would have taken him out.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, that dance. Laura knees him in the balls. He drops his gun. She shoots and narrowly misses him. He says, I can't live without you and I won't let you live without me. And then she picks up the phone and says, give me the police. And then says, come quickly. I've just killed an intruder.
Hello. All was forgiven at this point. That line, I was like,
incredible.
That is just amazing. And his face and everything. Loved it.
That reminds you, did you ever see the American guy on Millionaire who used his phone a friend a bit like that?
No.
Not the murderer.
Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford.
I like to call my parents right now.
Sure.
Use my lifeline, call my parents.
What are their names?
My father. I'll talk to my father. Hi, Dad.
Hi.
I don't really need your help. I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to win $1 million.
How cool is that?
I fucking love that.
That's very cool.
But yeah, what a moment. She informs him she's going to kill him before she kills him. And then she shoots him in the chest 3 times and he makes these inhuman sounds like an animal and he's down. But of course he comes back from the dead.
You have to. It's the roles.
I suppose so.
Of a slasher film, yeah. I mean, I do wonder about it because I've overthought this. Is it there to show that he would always have killed her? Which I don't think you need because it's quite obvious that he doesn't love her.
Because he grabs the gun and fires at her head but he's out of bullets.
So you don't need to show that character that this man never loved you. That's not what it is. So are you showing the audience that he really was a wrong one?
But this is like what I was saying earlier that got slightly misconstrued, which is this idea that, you know, in the language of cinema, you do need to see this person do an act of like something as abhorrent as murdering someone to sort of balance it out in your own head and go, well, he's a killer or he would have killed.
I just thought you'd do it now, would you? Because what he's done is enough for her to feel the way she feels.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess it's just...
So you're anti-death penalty and you're pro-death penalty. Is that what we're saying? It feels like that's what's happening here.
It does a bit, doesn't it? I mean, I'm glad you said it because you're the more reasoned of the two of us. Interesting. I didn't think that about you.
You should go back. You should go back and listen to this episode.
real eye-opening episode from that corner of the room.
And so Martin's dead. Ben wakes up. The end. It's very abrupt.
That's it.
I haven't got much more apart from the fact that Kevin Anderson and Julia Roberts were reunited in a film a few years later, a sort of animated live action thing, Charlotte's Web.
Oh,
yeah, that's what they got back together on. And while doing my research, I found out that
is he still creepy as an animated character?
No, he's live action in it,
okay.
And she's the spider.
She's the spider.
Yeah, and then so nothing. Nothing goes on between them. It's a spider and a human. Right.
I meant to say, you know, the montage earlier, you know, he is the one dressing her in all the hats and everything. Does that constitute, because he's sort of reaching round to adjust the visor. Would this fit under the reach around banner that you...
Thank you for asking. Does he adjust the hat to make it fit perfectly?
Yes.
Then yes, it does.
Right.
Very good. I'm surprised you missed it.
I missed the reach around. Yeah, it's right in front of me.
Vicky normally doesn't miss the reach around.
No, she loves a reach around.
And another weird thing I noticed, which I didn't know.
I literally didn't mean it like that. Let's go back to you liking the death penalty.
Patrick Bergin did 32 episodes of EastEnders in 2017.
He didn't.
I wish I'd seen it.
He didn't.
He went to Albert Square.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he blink at all?
That's quite a big get for EastEnders though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, a bit late in the day, but... All right, should we do the bits?
Mm.
Vicky, what's your favourite scene?
Come Quickly, I Just Killed an Intruder.
My favourite scene is Come Quickly, I've Just Killed an Intruder.
My favourite scene is Come Quick, I've Just Killed an Intruder.
Woo! Alex, what is your most valuable whatever?
Julia Roberts. Because again, a lot of it boils down to her relationship with Ben and making him seem less creepy by just smiling in a montage. Mm-hmm. So I can now be attached to Ben as less like a sort of secondary horror show in this movie. He is, until that point, I'm still like, wait, there's a part of me that goes, there is no way you can have two people who are doing this to Julia Roberts. And yet until she goes and turns on the Pretty Woman charm and all the rest of it, like it's the equivalent of the necklace box snapping shut in Pretty Woman where you're
the same. Yeah, the laugh. The laugh is there when he puts the hat on. Yeah, it's all there.
So yeah, Julia Roberts for doing it, doing a lot of work to make Ben seem normal.
That's a really good answer. Vicky.
Julia Roberts. For Alex's reasons, which I didn't articulate because he did it better, but everything she's been through, her resilience is really clear, her bravery. And then when she finally smiles, the relief that washed over me, you don't want to be away from that smile for too long. Yeah, her, obviously.
I'm going for Patrick Bergin. I didn't answer your question earlier, but what I've written here is I think he might be terrible in this movie, but he's also bloody terrifying. And that performance really stayed with me.
Yeah.
And what would you change, Vicky?
She should have a straight female friend at home who has absolutely no interest in shagging her, unlike Ben. And that's the first person she learns to feel safe again with. So you can still have a love interest because it's a film and I get that. But he's so on her case. It's deeply inappropriate. He can still have his hero moment. You can have both, but let's try and find time for a friendship that isn't complicated by sex at all. Mm-hmm. And it's more believable that she would find that comfortable after everything she's been through. You know, when she apologizes to him for not fucking him, I couldn't believe she had to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got that. I 100% agree with that. And Double Jeopardy does that much better by getting rid of this romantic character, because we don't need to see a romance straight after what we've seen the first 20 minutes. But I also, what I said earlier, I get that this is a film about domestic abuse, so it probably made sense for them to have the finale in Laura's home. But you've gone to all the trouble of getting a fair and sending them to the fair. Have your climax at the fair.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when the fair sequence ended and then they're picnicking on the lawn.
Yeah. Picnic at the fair. Alex.
So she goes back to the house. Not to cut her hair and put her ring down the toilet, but because there's something there, something personal that she's forgotten that she can't leave without. And she forgot to put it in a rucksack. It's something her mother gave her, some like trinket that is of quite immense value, an antique, a family heirloom. So that's why she goes back. And you think in the moment, you're like, oh, well, her mother's dead. So she wants to keep hold of that memory, and it's the only thing that she still has that attaches her to her mother, because he's got rid of everything else. So that's why she wants it. And that's why Martin sees the sand in the house and everything, because it was an impromptu thing to go and get this item. Then when we find out her mum's alive, it turns out that this is the item. It's worth a lot, and she has to sell it to pay for her mum being looked after in the care home and also pay rent on a massive house in the beautiful sun-kissed world of wherever she ends up. So mm-hmm. You kill two birds with one stone.
Yes.
That's good.
Much better.
Very good.
Yeah, really good.
All right, then we're done. Should we do a quiz?
Let's do a quiz. On Thursday, we're doing the film Double Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd play Jeopardy.
Okay.
Do you know how to play Jeopardy?
Yeah, you do the answer and we'll do the question.
So I'll give you an example. If I said Julia Roberts is pursued by her psychotic husband, you'd say, what is sleeping with the enemy?
Yeah.
Right. What is?
What? It's basically what is or who is. Although if you just blow out
Why is this such a big quiz show in America? It feels like a stupid quiz show.
To be honest, if you just blow out the answer, I'll give it to you.
Okay, thank you.
These are real Jeopardy questions from the American show.
Oh, these aren't movie-related?
They're all movie-related, right. But they're real ones from the show.
Okay.
These have been on the telly in America.
Wow. In the presence of greatness.
I know, trust us. Wow.
So, we'll start with Rachel Lee Cook, the ugly duckling.
She's all that.
Correct.
What is she's all that?
Can you try though? You didn't
all
even
right,
try
sorry,
then.
Sorry,
you didn't
sorry.
Even try
I'm
then.
Tense, because
what is she's all that?
What is she's all that?
Is pursued by Freddie Prinze Jr. in his high school comedy.
Oh, are they all about men pursuing women as well?
No, they aren't. Oh shit, this one might be. In Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Margot Robbie portrayed this late actress.
Who is Sharon Tate?
Correct. I like the fact that Vicky said, what is Sharon
Tate?
You don't have to say
who is or what is.
Right,
who
sorry.
Is or what yeah. is. Yeah, I did say that.
It's a lot to take in.
Okay. A highlight of this 2016 Disney film was a sloth working at the DMV.
What is Zootropolis?
Yeah.
Correct.
I would have accepted Zootopia or Zootropolis there.
Okay.
This person appeared in more than 35 Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Who is
James Stewart? No.
Who is Tippi Hedren? Who is Gregory Peck? Who is
35 is a lot.
Who is Cary Grant?
Who is Alfred Hitchcock?
Correct.
Yes!
Oh, very good. Very good.
35's a lot. Okay. Original wording of the Hollywood sign.
Who is Hollywood Land?
Fuck! I think we both got that. I really do.
I think that was right.
I think you both got that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that. Okay, this is the...
Not who is Hollywood Land, though.
Is that what I said?
That's what I said.
This is the final one. And just say the answer. Don't say who is or what is, because you're both saying who is or what is before you're thinking of the answer.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's
slowing me down.
It's a waste of time. Right. So just say the answer. Creators of Casper say this film's logo plagiarised one of their
Ghostbusters.
Fuck
correct.
Fuck off.
Oh, Alex wins with Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's gonna hurt.
Well played, Alex.
Oh wow, I don't think I've ever done anything so horrible to you in your entire life.
I feel sick.
Harvey Comics, creator of Casper, sued the producers, claiming the ghost in the logo was too close to the Casper character Fatso. The court ruled against them, stating there were only so many ways to draw a ghost.
Have you seen Ghostbusters?
Once or twice.
Oh, your favourite film.
Brilliant end to the quiz.
Well played, Alex.
Great quiz. All right, then. Let's look ahead, not to Thursday, first of all, but to next week. Chris's choices next week. What is your clue?
Next week, we're spending 3 episodes partaking in some guerrilla warfare.
3 episodes.
It's a three-way.
Come on. This is not, right, I've been thinking other ways to say that. What would you go for apart from three-way? Because I don't want you rolling your eyes all next week because I'm going to be saying it a lot.
Everything I say now just sounds awful. Mm-hmm. Triple-headed.
It's a triple-headed.
Christ.
It's a triple-headed.
Yes, triple-headed.
So worse than three-way.
Wait, you can't say threesome, can you?
It makes me think of weird hente.
Oh.
You know those demons.
Right, let's get out.
I've watched a lot of manga. Anime. I don't want to talk anymore. Good. On Thursday, then, we are coming back to talk about Double Jeopardy. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you have time. It's a massive help. And check in with us on social media at ClashPod on Twitter and Instagram. Back Thursday for some Double Jeopardy. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.